I said, what you know about it?
It's the stew, baby.
Got the mise en place.
Young stew lot, baby.
And the room a lot.
Hello, hello. You're listening to The Stew. My name is Jason Stewart, and this is my food podcast. Say hello, Andre Canaparo.
Hello.
My brother is not here. R.I.P.
R.I.P., Stewie.
If you're wondering why I'm rushing through this intro, it's because we just recorded 2 minutes without our audio of our special guest today, who is Andy Windack. Say hello.
Hello.
We are just going over some great things that we can go over again right now because I messed up. I'm sorry about that. But Andy is known for doing a pop-up called the Coconut Club, which is a really awesome special tiki-themed pop-up in L.A. that's very popular.
Multiple courses with pairings of cocktails.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pineapples. Yep. The list goes on. We're going to talk all about that as well, but you're also known for... you've done some appearances on a podcast called... Dining with Doug and Karen.
Yes, it's Doug Benson's food podcast. And most people will probably say, Doug Benson has a food podcast.
Hey, Andy's a pro. And we want to talk about that as well in 1 second. And you also do some catering and some private chefing. And you've appeared on Vice Munchies with TJ Miller from Silicon Valley and Stand Up Abroad.
And many other things. I mean, Transformers 4, come on.
Oh, boom. Yeah, Transformers 4. All right, well, first...
Shout out Michael Bay.
Let's talk about the podcast with Dining and Doug and Karen first. So that's Doug Benson, who's like a fairly well-known comedian who's known for smoking pot and doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He has a show called Getting Doug with High.
And then he's most famous for his... Whoa. Podcast.
You were all pro until your cell phone beeps.
I know. I failed. His Doug Loves Movies podcast.
And Doug Loves Movies is very big. Yeah, and he's done a couple like documentary things on...
Super Jaime. Mm-hmm.
Super Jaime. You know, Doug Benson, he's a real love him or hate him guy. I think he's funny, but a lot of people are just like, what is going on with this guy?
very stony.
He's very stony.
Very, yes.
But he's a smart guy.
Definitely.
Or is he? Let's take a peek behind the curtain.
I mean, every time I've interacted with him, he's been stoned, so I can't really say. So
they have a thing where they record a podcast, get stoned, and you cook food for them?
Yeah, so they have like a comedian guest come on, and then they also have a chef guest come on, and the chef makes food. And while the chef's off making food, the comedian guest and Doug and Karen just chit-chat. Mm-hmm. And it's also a way for him to further plug his brand and his tour dates and his... Mm-hmm. And that. Yeah, there, of course.
That's why we do a pods.
Can we start including guest chefs coming on and cooking food for us while we podcast?
We can try to work. I mean, we have one.
Well, here's the problem. A lot of people hate it when there's food eating noises on a podcast.
And always hate it.
There's a lot of criticism for that because on Dining with Doug and Karen, like... That's what they do. They eat the food live.
You hear the clinking with the fork. Ow.
Yeah. I mean, as much as you can try to turn away from the microphone, you inevitably forget, and it's chewing noises that nobody really wants to hear.
And when you're super high, it really intensifies that annoyance.
I'm sure, yeah. So it's also very interesting because they do the recording most often at the Nerd Melt Studios at Meltdown Comics in West Hollywood.
They have a great kitchen facility there, I'm
sure. Fantastic. It's actually, it used to be a Michelin star kitchen. And
Blue star, 8-burner range.
Yeah.
Now they have a Michelin rated microwave.
Yes. And a refrigerator in the green room. Mm-hmm. And there's a sink you can use that's in the staff bathroom. So you can imagine the kinds of foods that you can achieve is a little bit challenging.
So, oddly enough, no cooking involved whatsoever.
It's opening of Dorito bags. These are the best Doritos.
But the last time I was on the podcast, the first course I brought out was a bag of Christmas Haribo Gold Bears that were the red and green color only. And I said, like, I want to try these with you because I want to see if they're special flavored or if they're just, like, regular red and green Haribo. And it was the latter, sadly. Sadly, because they're the best gummy bears. But
you're hoping for, like, a cranberry and mist mistletoe combination.
Yeah, something like that, you know.
Those are delicious gummies, though. I had some this weekend while high.
Sorry, I buy them by the 10-pound, or not 10-pound, but 3-pound bag. You know, the big
huge
one.
For yeah.
3-pound Haribo bag?
No. Yeah. Well,
how do you keep your slim figure?
It's actually one of the things we serve at the Coconut Club is the clear Haribo Gold Bear.
I love the clear.
Best.
It's the best one,
flavor.
Which is supposedly, allegedly pineapple. Which is why I serve
it. I'll buy that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Sure.
Actually, 2 days ago, my friend threw a clear Haribo gummy at me, and I took a picture of it, and it registered on film on a white background, and I was very proud of myself.
Phenomenal photography.
It's a bad segue, but we'll carry on. I have a question about that. When you make food for that podcast, do you have to pay for the food yourself?
Yes. There's
great question.
Only been one appearance where Doug reimbursed me. I asked from the very beginning, it's like, hi, does Nerdist have a stipend for the food ingredients? And they're like, no. So the first time I thought it was going to be like this great publicity outlet. I was going to get a billion new Twitter followers. It was going to be amazing. So I was right. like, I'm going to go all out.
Worth it.
I like paid over $100 to have antelope short ribs flown in from Texas.
What? Oh my God.
I was like, because one of the things I made was the jackalope taco. So it was
wow.
a bacon fat flour tortilla with a braised rabbit pate, jack cheese for the jack.
And yeah.
yeah. Then a bacon fat deep fried crispy corn shell. You know, you glue the soft one on the outside.
Like a double-decker taco?
Yeah, like whatever they call it at Taco Bell, you know?
Double-decker taco.
Yeah, yeah. So,
holy shit.
And
I'm
then, and
blowing
then
my mind.
Beer-braised antelope short rib in the inside, and green zebra tomato, and a rabbit bacon yellow peach hot sauce.
Holy shit.
All right, I have a few questions.
In the next episode, they got a bag of Twizzlers.
Yeah, pretty much, because then I was like, oh, shit, I just spent a ton of money. And I got like 15 new Twitter followers, and I was like, want.
Hey, fool you once.
Yeah,
shame on me. Well, first off, how big is a antelope short rib?
I mean, they're not that big. I can't even remember.
I'm not assuming that they are big.
Yeah, they're not like pork.
I mean, ribs. I want them to be like tiny. Like
they're like that, yeah.
They're like 3 inches.
Yeah.
And you had them flown in.
Yeah.
How did they taste?
You know, I mean, it's like any other venison. It's a little bit gamey. It's a little bit tougher when you cook it. You gotta like cook it a lot longer than some
okay.
other things.
And for deep frying something in bacon fat, did you buy bacon fat already, or did you make the bacon fat by rendering it yourself?
It was all rendered out. So here's the thing. We should back up to the origin story of all of this.
Rewind.
Yeah. So I
the birth of iTunes.
Yes.
I met Steve Jobs.
Did Steve Jobs invent the podcast? Who invented the podcast?
I don't know. We don't talk about that.
Another time. So I used to work at this animation studio called Shadow Machine, which used to produce Seth Green's show for Adult Swim, Robot Chicken, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I emphasize used to because they don't anymore. So I was working in post-production. I was a compositor, and after the end of season 5 of Robot, we were starting this new project that was an independently financed, R-rated, stop-motion comedy animation film. Which you're like, okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll pay to see that is my answer. But yeah, how does that possibly happen?
Yeah.
Like South Park kind of thing?
Yeah, but not based on an existing property, so...
Okay.
Kind of a hard sell, and Seth Green's not involved at all, so like it's not from the creator of Robot Chicken or anything like that. So
if Seth Green's not involved, good luck getting it sold in this town.
This is a very interesting project on multiple levels because it was a production that started without a script and finished without a completed script. Don't ask how or why. but on this project, my bosses came to me one day and said, hey, we want to build a kitchen, we want to have lunch service for the crew. We want you to run it. And I was like, oh, well, this sounds like a dream job. Let's do it. So we built this kitchen, and I did lunch service. And, of course, on the production line, I was not billed as a chef. I was billed as a technical supervisor. But I was primarily cooking lunch and shit for people. And, you know, it started with, like, having fancy coffee and then, like, you know, fancy lunches and snacks in the afternoon, all that good stuff. So through that is actually how I met TJ Miller, because he did one of the voices on the film.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, then went and did the Dining with Doug and Karen.
This is the other partner of the Coconut Club.
What? Oh, wait, no. Mm. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
TJ.
Got it, yeah.
The comedian. So that was sort of how that all got started. Now I can't even remember why I rewound, because we were supposed to point out something.
We're talking about when you do the Doug Benson podcast, how you have to buy all of your own food.
Yeah.
And then you spend a lot of money on antelope shorts.
Right. Times.
I mean, maybe you're talking about how you got plugged in to doing that podcast.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that's how. Story's okay. Over.
So what kept you coming back to do, if you've done that show, you said six different times now.
Well, the second time Doug was like, okay, who do you want me to get as your guest? And I think my first response was, because this was me trying to get, because like when I first met TJ, I made lunch for him because he was there doing voice records. And he hired me on the spot to come cook dinner for him and his girlfriend that night.
Really?
Whoa.
So he's like, hey, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, I don't know, laundry? And he's like, no, you're going to come to my house and you're going to cook dinner for me and my girlfriend. And I was like, okay. And everyone, of course, at the office was all joking, like, ha ha, you're going to show up. It's going to be him and a blow-up doll. Like, so I, like, you know, quickly put together a menu, like, go shopping, prep some stuff, and, like, show up at his apartment. I, like, get up to the front, to his door, like, knock on the door. And he answers the door in these super short shorts and, like, a leather police vest and nothing else.
Whoa.
But then my face apparently just, like, dropped and there was, like, I only cook dinner kind of reaction. but then he immediately was like, haha, just joking. This isn't what I'm going to wear. I just wanted to see what your reaction was.
Wow. Classic TJ.
Classic TJ. And, you know, it was all fine and dandy after that. But, yeah, anyways. So afterwards, when Doug was like, oh, who do you want me to get for your next guest? And I was like, huh, well, this is the Nerdist Network. They have a lot of connections. I know John Hamm was just on the Nerdist podcast.
Mm.
So I was like, John Hamm, I want a new celebrity client. Come on.
Shooting for the top.
Shoot for the stars.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, if I had some backups, I was thinking, like, where are the other people that, like, that Doug might know? And I said, like, Tim Heidecker offhandedly, because I am a fan of Tim and Eric.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I ended up with. So I was like, okay, it's not John Hamm.
So no Hamm.
Very close, though.
Very close. Close second.
Hey, if Hamm opened the door with the leather police vest, it might go down a little different.
Probably. So, and then the third time was Sarah Silverman, and everyone told me that she was strict vegan. So I made a completely vegan meal and then learned after the fact that she's just a vegetarian. And then... We did...
When you're on the show, do you get to be on mic and talk to people as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I go in and out to go prep the food, mm-hmm. and then I come back on and talk.
So you come back, you drop some salads, and then you whip a couple zingers on the mic, and back into the kitchen you go?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, I love that guy, Andy. He's so good.
Pretty much. That's pretty much exactly
what and it is. And has that boosted your... Has that been good publicity for you?
I mean, I've gotten, like, one client out of it. Someone who is like, hey, I heard you on the podcast. Can you come cook dinner for my girlfriend's birthday?
Not bad.
That's one. All right, we can put on the board.
Yeah, yeah. So you do a decent amount of private catering and stuff like that?
Yeah, I've had one gig this week. And I have another one on Saturday, so it's busy. And then next week, we have Coconut Club, so it's like...
So is that your main gig, then?
Yeah, for the most part.
Full-time chefing?
Other random stuff. Like, I work for a sock company that makes socks with words on them. Like, the bestseller is bacon, followed by beer.
Okay.
So I do design mock-ups in Illustrator, and then they get sent to a manufacturer, and then the manufacturer fucks them up, and then I have to correct them and send notes to them.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, why did you do this wrong, China? Why?
I'm sure the breakdown from Illustrator file to sock, there's a lot of gray area in between.
Yeah, there is. Because they won't tell you how they set up the file that communicates with the weaving machine.
Yeah.
It's like, can you just give me that so I can program it myself?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of giving you an Illustrator file and having you translate that.
Give me dot weave file.
Yeah, exactly. I want to punch in those like matrix of yarn manually.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds so much fun. No, it doesn't at all.
Over time. So you're a little jack of all trades, but It seems like we're going in the direction of full-time chefing, but you have no interest in working in a restaurant? Or do you like the freelance lifestyle?
You know, I mean, I think the freelance lifestyle is potentially more fun, in a way. It has its perks and its drawbacks.
Way more fun.
Yeah.
It has perks and drawbacks, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely inconsistent. You don't know what's
going to happen. It's inconsistent, but you don't have to work 18 hours a day.
Exactly.
And then your wife leaves you and your kids hate you and stuff like that.
Classic chef story.
Yeah. Classic.
From the film Chef.
From the film Chef.
Check it out. Yeah, but you have the phone might not ring and you have no money, but then when it does ring, you're flying high.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, great job, Andy. You killed it.
And you get to do your own thing / be your own boss. But I mean, trying to like plug this in with the pop-up thing, because obviously it would be very hard to work in a restaurant full-time and also do a pop-up restaurant because, like...
It would be impossible.
Probably impossible.
Impossible, yeah. Yeah.
Depending on how busy the restaurant is that you work in, the last thing you want to do is a pop-up.
Yeah, for sure. And
or
plus,
even look at food.
Exactly. And I think I've had this idea of wanting to do a pop-up for like a number of years, and especially doing the food service at the studio in what we called the Cantina. And I wanted to do it there.
Did we call it that, or did you call it that?
I call it that. Okay. We're going to call it the Cantina.
Which is great.
It's great. And it was a really cool space. I mean, like every Friday we'd have a party at the end of the day called Weeklies, where you watch... It's like dailies in regular filmmaking, but weeklies in animation because it takes forever, and you only get like 5 minutes a week. So we have a party, you get beer, you have like we did like a different theme of food every week, and you know watch the weeklies. So the space was great. I wanted to do a pop up there. The owners of the company were like, rah, 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 because like there's a lot of. I mean, it's hard to bring people into a building full of intellectual property, even though we were able to lock the doors off from the studio to the Cantina. But I did let me have my 25th birthday party in the Cantina, which was a 25 taste meal for 25 people. That was the concept.
Ooh. 25 taste meal?
Yeah, so like some of the stuff with drinks and some of the stuff with food. It wasn't, I wanted to say 25 courses because that sounds like absurd.
Mm-hmm, because it is.
Yeah, but I wanted it to be like 25 things that you get to like taste. And the placemat was actually like an illustrated game board with 25 spaces.
Oh my god.
And everyone got a pencil so they could write notes in on the game board spaces about each thing.
This is cooler than anything I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, you're... I mean, you're like a special person.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, no, in a literal way. You're going above and beyond what anybody I know would do, which is awesome.
You know what the problem with it is, though? When you constantly try to go above and beyond, you feel like you have to.
Right.
Perpetually. And then you're always trying to top yourself, and then it becomes perpetually harder.
And then you're known as the guy who, like, what is he going to do this time?
Exactly.
Once your first appearance on the podcast is we're flying in antelope short ribs and we're doing... Right. And whatever.
That wasn't even for your birthday.
The taco that you just described is, like, the most... insane thing I've ever heard of, and that's just what you start off with. Mm-hmm. So where do you go from there?
Exactly, that's the problem. And then
like mini golf in Torrance for your 40th.
Maybe you and Tiger Woods should hang out. Commiserate.
All right, yeah, that's the problem. It's always trying to like reinvent. So I mean, the pop up, not the podcast, has been sort of like the ultimate culmination of that. And here's the thing about the tiki wrapper of it. It's very interesting because...
Tiki wrapper?
Well, the wrapper of it, of the Coconut Club, is this tiki theme.
Okay.
And it's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. I don't consider myself a tiki file, even though I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt right now.
For our listeners at home, he's wearing yellow pants and a Hawaiian
yellow
shirt right now.
The yellow t-shirt.
But other than that, not tiki.
Yeah, well...
Ian McKay up top... Tiki down low.
Out of step up top. Very colorful on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. So I think there's this thing about, like, what do you think about when you think about, I say tiki, what do you think?
A scorpion bowl?
Yeah.
You know, like flaming...
Well,
flaming
I grew up in Orange Eastern County, Idol. So tiki was pretty big there. It's kind of like when you're a retired guy and you have a big belly and you want to barbecue and drink beer and have Mai Tais and... That's kind of, and then you might have a cool car with flames on it. Mm-hmm. There's little statues with a little cute tiki man.
See, so yeah, that is like the perception of what you have when you think tiki. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I'm trying to do. And we have some people who come into the Coconut Club who are really hardcore rockabilly tiki.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they think that this is what it's going to be.
Which is a very insane subculture.
Oh, it's
the tiki
very
subculture
intense.
Is super intense.
Like, yeah, and I understand and appreciate it. I'm coming from sort of the aesthetic of the whimsicalness of it. Mm-hmm. And also sort of the fact that in mid-century America, this was a form of fine dining or like a night out on the town. And also in Los Angeles, which is sort of like the birthplace of this culture originally,
mm-hmm.
These were the hot spots. These were like, you know, mm-hmm. Donna Beachcomber, like huge Hollywood spot. Like there were many others over the years.
You go get a poo-poo platter.
You have a
nice dame on your shoulder.
And these fancy cocktails that had like, you know, 7+ ingredients, which is crazy to think about all the other classic cocktails that we mm-hmm. think of that are only like, you know, 2 to 4 ingredients.
Not so crazy now in 1960.
Yeah, it was
unheard of.
Revelation.
Ridiculous.
So I'm coming from that approach, which I think is very interesting, and then also trying to modernize it. Because it seems like that hardcore tiki culture is so stuck in like a past time and place. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is like reminiscence and like, you know, like you said, old guys they're trying to recapture
nostalgic rut,
yeah. So it's very much trying to think about like how we could project the idea of tiki into the 21st century, which mm-hmm. is a huge challenge because you have all these expectations that exist. But then at the same time, because tiki is such a huge reappropriation of all these different cultures, like, you know, obviously South Pacific, and then this weird like Chinese thing for no reason. And the most interesting part, I think, is guys who wear fezes in tiki culture.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
Where did that come from?
Like the monkey with the fez on it.
Yeah, like,
you see, like on shelves.
There's all this like weird like reappropriation, and then of course there's the whole like mid-century thing because of like Hawaii and like this obsession with the South Pacific because of Hawaii becoming a state.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's all these different facets, and to me that says like, in this postmodern era, tiki can be whatever the hell you want it to be because it's all about reappropriating culture and creating an escapist fantasy.
Yeah, that's so, that seems like a good idea in your head, but a tough sell.
It is a tough sell because tiki also has this really strong lowbrow connotation to a lot of people, because when you think about tiki drinks, you think, okay, they're really sugary, they're really sweet, like right. juice and rum kind of thing.
It's kitsch.
Yeah, it's kitsch. And I love kitsch.
Yeah.
And then you think about the food and you're like, oh, it's a poo-poo platter that's not very good,
right.
sadly.
Right.
So, like, how do you move beyond that but still sort of honor mm-hmm. that is a huge challenge. So I think this is definitely, like, that ultimate culmination of, like, how do I one-up myself is by creating a challenge that's seemingly so challenging that I'll always have to be working at it to make it better and better.
Yeah, it seems like a good... It's good to create things under that umbrella because you can do whatever you want, but you also have the limitations and restrictions of having it be a very specific tiki theme. So it's not just like, hey, make a dish, and you're
yeah.
like, with a blank sheet of paper. If you're like, hey, make a tiki dish with your own flavor.
Exactly.
And
which is
the
hard part. Because, like, I mean, my favorite type of food to make, just for myself in general in life, is like Mediterranean Italian food. Like, that's just what I love to eat.
Okay.
And I mean, I guess you could also just classify that as like Californian food, which is, you know, mm-hmm. very produce heavy. Mm-hmm. It seems to have like really strong Mediterranean sort of like influence. It's mm-hmm. very like European. But then, of course, you also have all this like Asian shit that gets thrown in there too. But in any case, like, I wanted to do a pop-up that had more of a definition than just, here's food.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And no offense to anyone else who's doing a pop-up, but I feel like when you throw out words like farm to table, I've heard that so many times now that it kind of is a negative connotation to me at this point, where I'm like, farm to table, yeah, whatever. Like, don't tell me that. That should be implied in all the food I'm eating. Like,
yes.
That's how I feel. If you're going to an expensive dinner, like, to a certain extent, and I know that, like, from doing this now, that it's not always feasible to say, like, we're 100% farm to table or 100% organic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think farm to table should be necessarily a genre.
Something to hang your hat on. Yeah,
yeah.
Like Wolfgang Puck, he's at the Santa Monica Farmer's Market fairly often, and like he would never say like I have a farm to table restaurant. It's just like, yeah, it's you're kind of above that. if you have an expensive restaurant that is good, it's implied that you're using
good
those
stuff.
Quality ingredients.
Yeah.
So, otherwise, it's a rip. Exactly.
Well, also, if it's mentioned in the in the trying to qualify or advertise the restaurant, it means they're probably hanging their hat on that and not going past it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To a degree?
I mean, because there's a lot of places that seem like, you know, have the good ingredients, but they're not really, like, innovating them enough to make them, like, their
own
thing.
There's a lot of places that just... We have the best produce, so instead of cooking a dish with all of these things together in a smart way, we're going to tweezer them onto a plate because they let them speak for themselves, and then you're not really, you know, anyone can just put them on a plate.
Yeah.
Then you're not a chef, you're an artiste.
It's funny about the thing about the tweezers, because I just bought a pair.
Oh, well, how does it feel? How long were you holding out for?
Well, it's weird because I kept thinking about it. I was like, yeah, that's one of those things that's relatively inexpensive that you should just get, you know? Because mm-hmm. there's certain times that you're like fumbling around and I have big hands, so it's like you're fumbling around with little things. And mm-hmm. And I just tried them out for the first time the other night, and I think I need some more practice because I was kind of clunky with them.
Well, I mean, you can't expect just to dive right into a tweezer lifestyle, man.
No, I know.
It takes a while.
But that's the thing, too, with like doing the Coconut Club is like, where do you draw the line of, like, I mean, I want it to be highbrow, lowbrow, but how much highbrow and how much lowbrow?
Sure.
So it's like,
it's tough.
I feel like I need the tweezers, but then I also need the Haribo gummy bear because...
Well, you need Bacardi 151 to set everything on fire.
You know what? We actually don't use Bacardi 151. We use Ray & Nephew Overproof for White Rum, which is tasty. Bacardi 151 tastes like
tasteless.
Lighter fluid.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And if it, like, spills into your drink, it, like, ruins your drink.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about everything we've done thus far with the Coconut Club is there's been no drinks on fire, only food.
Oh. So what you don't know what's happening
with
the pairing.
That's my, like, playing on the convention. It's like, everyone has a flaming tiki drink. Like, I want a flaming tiki food.
What is a food that you have flamed?
Well, the one that we've been doing a lot, which we're actually not doing this next time, is the volcano cake. And I basically engineered a volcano cake that not only has fire on top, and then you hit it with the cinnamon to make sparks, but it also has a lava flow.
Oh.
Yes.
So it's got red lava coming out of it as the fire burns.
That's fantastic.
Okay, when is the next Coconut Club, by the way?
It's actually a week from Saturday, so I've got a lot of work to do.
The 24th and 25th?
25th and 26th.
25th
yeah.
and 26th.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing about, do you guys do it monthly or bi-monthly?
Approximately monthly. It's always, it's so exhausting that, like, as soon as it's done, it's like, crap.
As soon as it's done, you don't want to think about anything like
ever,
that for a few days?
And then, like, it's a matter of, like, getting it organized again. And the hardest part is locking down a venue, which is a huge challenge.
Was it different every time?
We've only been at about 3 different venues. And this is, I think, going to be our 11th and 12th nights we've done ever. We did about 7 nights last year and 4 so far this year.
That's good.
So the venue we're at right now is very interesting because it actually used to be a tropical restaurant in the 50s called Vagabond's House. And I kind of accidentally came upon this space before knowing this fact. I didn't actually seek it out. It just serendipitously happened.
Mm-hmm. The tiki gods.
The tiki gods smiled upon it. And most recently, this space was La Fonda Mariachi Club in the MacArthur Park neighborhood. It's on Wilshire.
This is a good pedigree.
Yeah, so I've never actually been to La Fonda. Nathan had gone there and dined.
La Fonda's a great name.
Yeah, it's just this huge space. It apparently has a liquor license that's grandfathered in. That you can't get this license anymore. Only a few other places in LA has it, where you can stay open all night. You have to stop serving at 2, but you can stay open all night.
And then come back on and start serving at 6?
I don't know. I don't know all the details. Okay. We're not trying to do that.
So you just order 52 beers at 1:55 a.m.?
Yeah, and then just keep on partying. but it's if you're familiar with, like, MacArthur Park, it's very transitional neighborhood. Like, people talk about a wave.
What a kind word from MacArthur Park.
Transitional neighborhood.
Transitional.
I mean, it's
do you mean
weird...
like I'm transitioning from being shot at?
For listeners at home,
car?
No es bueno. Yeah.
It's the weird missing link of gentrification between Koreatown and downtown. Yeah. But I mean, everyone likes to use.
ID, that's where you go.
Yeah, if, everyone likes to use the word "good bones" because MacArthur Park theoretically is beautiful and is full of great architecture.
It's got good bones.
It's got good bones.
Is it a '92 Camry?
I've never heard people really describing this neighborhood that much. This is the neighborhood where like Langer's is.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yes, I mean, and there's a big park called MacArthur Park that may or may not have been the scene of a lot of movies. I think Drive, the movie Drive, was filmed a lot there.
Been,
but
it's
also,
very iconic to L.A., but also iconically like, dangerous to people who
live
there.
It's like before they fixed up Echo Park Lake, because there's a lake in MacArthur Park as well, but like you don't want to go hang out there.
No.
Yeah, Echo Park, not very good bones.
So in any case, this building is really interesting because it was bought last year by Jinji Cohen, who is the creator of Orange is New Black and Weeds. And she's remodeling the upstairs and the back of the building right now for her production offices.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's promise.
Cantina,
like,
too.
Cantina, well, who knows? That would be awesome. But they're trying to lease out the restaurant. And in the interim, I've come in to do this weird pop-up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't look great, the space.
Right.
It's seen better days, but it's very interesting because the back half is still the exact same shape as when it was Vagabond's House, the tropical restaurant in the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same shape. I have the vintage photos that had all the decorations on it. And the best part is I found this room that was like a graveyard of broken furniture, like just a mountain of broken chairs. And I ignored it at first, and then I saw that the original wallpaper from Vagabond's House was still intact in this room, and I found a vintage photo that proved that it was a private dining room. So I ended up dragging all the broken furniture out of the room, and I swear this room is haunted, because every time, and this, I'm like, this is me doing this by myself in this giant, dark, haunted building by myself. Every time you'd go into this old room, you could feel the energy change. And when you'd go out again, it would feel completely different. And I'm, you know, like nothing like too spooky, but you could definitely like feel sort of a presence to it. So at the last Coconut Club, we had a tiki seance in this room.
Really?
To conjure Vagabond's ghost, which was a cocktail. it was like a coconut milk, pineapple juice, lime juice, pig's blood, and kava. So it's like a light effervescent pina colada, essentially.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, you guys are always killing it.
Minus the pig's blood. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. So, and I think there was even like some sort of anise liqueur that he like missed it over the top. So, like the first sip would give you that
miss.
Like that curious like,
black licorice.
Yeah, like confusion. Just to throw you off. And black licorice is like a flavor that you find in some tiki cocktails, like the Dr. Funk. So it's not out of place. it's definitely a lot of interesting things going on there. And this space, I don't know how much longer we'll actually be there and where we'll go next, but, you know.
Well, listeners, if you have a space that's good for a pop-up, feel free to hit us up.
Preferably haunted.
We're looking haunted. Doesn't have to be haunted, but if it is, it'd be great.
Another idea for a pop-up that I had was the Haunted Hotel.
Okay.
I mean, that might be a future venture, or the Coconut Club presents the Haunted Hotel, or just do a whole separate Halloween thing. I don't know.
I think that's a good
idea. That would
idea.
Be fantastic.
Yeah, because there's all these haunted hayrides and things like that. It's a huge industry. But I don't care about them because I'm not a kid. But if there's a great meal there, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Suddenly, that's fine. I don't need to be spooked.
I haven't gone to the Coconut Club and I've wanted to. Jason told me about it a while ago. But, you know, without knowing a lot about it, you kind of assume a little bit about kind of the normal tiki culture that you were mentioning not doing. But I love that. Or what really excites me, and I want to go
10 times more is that you're not relying on nostalgia. You're intellectualizing it more and playing with it. And that's really, really exciting. Because just as a backdrop, Tiki's fun, but it could go a lot farther, and it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing.
Exactly. And the biggest part of what has sort of driven this forward is Darren's contribution. And Darren is our like MC host kind of character who guides the diners through the meal. And this is another thing that I don't think anyone else is really doing is instead of like, you know, having the chef or the server come out and say like, oh, well, here is, you know, a carrot tweezered on the plate. Like it's, you know, we have someone who's creating this artificial lore surrounding every dish and drink. And yes, it is in a way overselling some things. I think there was a point in the copy that said
the Haribo bear was oversold a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, no, it was something about like something being the ultimate tiki revelation, and that made Nathan feel very uncomfortable. He's like, don't oversell it, don't oversell it. And I'm like, but it's really good. You don't have to worry about it. Like, you know, and I think, you know, at a certain point, I just want to create this hype in a way around the meal, and we have like, you know, toasts that you have to participate in. So one of the things is I have a paper mache volcano that's rigged with a fog machine that erupts.
This is a cool okay.
You
sorry.
Have to
I'm not gonna erupt.
In order to appease the volcano god Vulcan, you have to toast with this cocktail, and we have this like 10-foot tall tiki sculpture, which was built by your neighbor down the street.
It was great work.
And so he built this huge sculpture, and that's the Vulcan sculpture. Everyone has to do this toast to appease him, and the drink is called Lava. It's an ice blended drink of mezcal, so it's very smoky, like sort of conjuring this like fire and smoke idea, with Campari and a cinnamon syrup and like hibiscus syrup and there's like a black lava salt on the rim. Oh, and there's grapefruit juice too. It's that's the cocktail that everyone either, of course, loves or hates because it's mezcal.
And Campari,
which love is also both. Very polarizing. But yeah. So you would clearly love this.
I love both as well. Yeah.
But I find the best part is that like it's the most intriguing drink, and it's the least expected in terms of like being like this is a tiki drink.
And the black salt, I'm imagining, looks like black sand on beaches in Hawaii. Like,
exactly.
Or like a volcano, but yeah, that's so cool.
It seems like, I mean, because pop-up restaurants, especially nowadays in LA, are pretty expensive. You're kind of like you're putting a lot of money down and putting a lot of trust in the people doing the event that they're going to give you your money's worth. And it sounds like just food alone and drink alone, you guys far and above and beyond those expectations. Like everything that you've described so far sounds insane, but then you also give them this huge production value, which nobody else is doing.
Yeah,
like you're making 10-foot sculptures, and you're having volcanoes, and you have an MC. There's so many pop-up things I've been to or restaurants I've been to with, like, tasting prefix menus where, like, the dumb waiter, I mean, pardon the pun.
We're talking about an actual closet.
Hey, that would be pretty awesome.
Wall.
The bummer server will just come and be like, here's your fennel, blah, 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 and you're, like, eating it, and you're like, what is going on here? And, like, if you have any questions or you wonder anything about it, you're just kind of asking your neighbor, and you have no idea, but, like, if everyone's eating this thing that has just been invented, nobody's ever had it, and you have a guy on a microphone describing what exactly is going on and hyping it up, getting you excited, it's
and
so
giving
awesome.
You a narrative to follow is what sounds really exciting,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm not a strong one, or I haven't been yet. I'm not saying that it's a
yeah, I mean, it's definitely
front-end story, but
it's a loose narrative to it. Yeah, and like there's also in between, there's video art projections that are a lot of like, not just, you know, like, you know, you got like your Elvis Blue Hawaii stuff, and we have it all like kaleidoscoped, so it's like, you know, Elvis going to Elvis and like, you know, Hawaiian shirts and stuff. But then there's also, I mean, my favorite clip on the whole like video art reel is a scene from an episode of The Golden Girls where Blanche is dating this guy, and the guy won't have sex with her, and she's completely baffled why. So she rents a really expensive hotel room at this unbelievable tiki hotel that has like a bar that comes out of the wall and a vibrating bed and a disco ball that comes down from the ceiling, and she's trying to seduce him, but he's just not that, you know, he's just not that easy of a guy. Like
sure.
he doesn't want to have sex that early into dating Blanche,
and we love that about him.
Exactly.
At any point, do you dose anybody with acid at these parties at any point?
No, but I think we've had some people who seemed kind of coked out at the last one coming in.
You can say that about any restaurant in LA, though.
Yeah, seriously.
I can say that about my 7-Eleven in Los Feliz.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing about it is, to me, it's a lot of alcohol that's being served.
Yes.
You're not really getting your money's worth on the alcohol.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's definitely spaced out over time and with a lot of food. So the feedback that I get is, for the most part, people are tipsy. Like, you get a good buzz, but you're never, like, drunk. And by the end of the meal, you're like, I could drive. Which I think is a good thing. But then you have other people, especially from the hardcore rockabilly tiki set, who are probably big drinkers to begin mm-hmm. with, who are like, it wasn't enough alcohol. Those drinks were so weak.
I brought 7 flasks in my jacket. Yeah. Finished them all.
Yeah, if you're that kind of guy, then you've already brought your own flask.
Yeah, and I mean, the funny part is, too, is at the beginning, we have a half-hour arrival window, because it's LA, where we serve punch, and it's free refills, so it's kind of a free-for-all. Ooh. There are people who literally have, like, 4 cups of punch at the beginning before they even sit down. So, like, there is opportunity. And I know I personally, because I obviously haven't experienced this meal as a diner, if I'd ever experience it, I'm sure I would be pretty drunk at the end of it, because that's
just who you are. And I'm probably the same way. I'm not a lightweight, though. I'm just a...
Yeah,
heavy drinker.
I would have had 4 things of punch, so yeah, I probably would.
I think that should be. I would be a 4 puncher.
I would be a 4 punch guy.
I mean, why not? Your the sub line for Coconut Club should be Coconut Club. I could drive.
The thing is, like,
I could drive.
When you're thinking about liability, I always put on the email, like, hey, consider taking like an Uber because there's alcohol involved. Right. But I think that's just like as a disclaimer for me to say, like, don't get fucking drunk and drive.
Yeah.
But then I've had people like on the feedback survey be like, I wasted all this money on an Uber thinking I'd be wasted. And I'm like, it's a dinner party, not like...
God damn.
You were still probably illegally driving. Like, you still would have been
You would have got pulled over, your ass would have... I mean, how many cocktails do you serve... at this event?
The past we've been doing about 5, the next one...
Five cocktails.
5 is plenty to blow over. And they're like, you know, they're tiki, so there's like, you know, lots of alcohol, right?
Yeah, and I mean, like, they're not all like ginormous, but they're at least like a regular serving worth of liquor. Right. And it's all hard liquor, so like, it's...
Yeah. And these are all like very thoughtful, intricate drinks with high quality ingredients that you would... pay $15 for at a bar easily.
And I say, absolutely. I mean, if there were a brick and mortar version, the Coconut Club cocktail would probably have to be $18 because it's served in a whole coconut, which is very labor intensive to open a coconut for every single guest. But I have a streamlined way now that involves power tools.
So you use the young coconut or the...
No, mature brown coconut, because that's the aesthetic I'm going for. I don't want any of these stupid, like, chopped up Thai coconuts that you can get at the street corner at Alvarado and Glendale from the guy who's,
so
like,
you get, like, shots the fired. Hawaiian, like, fibrous, like,
yeah,
husky.
The whole brown...
I don't know, fuck with no fucked up, whack-ass young coconuts. Bullshit.
I was hoping your new plan involves somebody from Home Depot. You're like, I now have a streamlined version.
I've got an ace up my sleeve.
About noon before we start.
I have a guy come out, give him $10.
You know, I thought, I've never used a day laborer from Home Depot, but at this venue, the underside of every single table had at least 30 pieces of gum stuck to it. And I thought for a hot second, I'm like, do I just go down to the street to the Home Depot, give a guy $20 to come scrape gum? Like,
the answer is yes.
I mean,
he wants
someone to said it, like, yeah, and it's not backbreaking work.
No,
it's probably like the easiest job he'll ever get from a Home Depot.
You're not asking him something insanely illegal and dangerous, like get on my roof without support and clean my gutters.
So, I mean, but I ended up doing it myself, actually, while listening to some of your podcasts. Alone in this building, and the podcast was the only thing to ward off the ghosts.
You're never alone with iTunes.
It's true. I mean, the only catch is the internet in this building is also very, like, the phone connection is very spotty.
Genji, get on that shit. You're not going to be able to produce shit out of that office without some Genji. Wi-Fi?
No, she'll get some Wi-Fi. They think they're still a ways off. They must be putting, like, over $1 million into renovating that. I mean, it's like... And that's the problem with this space.
Rolling the dice, Con.
It's such a huge space, and it's... a neighborhood. Like, basically, the owner said to me when I first looked at the space, they're like, because there's also a 200-seat theater in the building.
Holy shit.
Wow.
So they want someone to come in with a super hipster concept to be like, we've got a 200-seat venue and a fancy pants restaurant bar. Like, the owners basically said, we want, like, Bestia or something to come in here. And I'm thinking, that's a wonderful fantasy, but MacArthur Park is not the arts district yet. It's actually quite a ways off.
Yeah.
I want a gold toilet, but it ain't going to happen, buddy.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, this space as a restaurant needs like $1 million of work just to update the electrical and the plumbing. It's all, like, it's all fucked up.
But it's got good bones.
No.
I mean, like, it's got
bones. You got to like gut the whole place, totally renovate it. And then I think they want something like $20,000 a month for the lease. So like when you think about it, like trying to do a restaurant concept, which of course most all restaurant concepts fail because it's like the hardest industry. Like, what are you going to do there?
Chipotle.
The mega Chipotle.
The mega Chipotle. The screening Chipotle.
With the screening room.
They're going to try to sell it for a year and lower the price eventually. And
they keep telling me that someone's supposedly about to sign.
Wow.
Never heard that one before from a real estate guy.
But that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately is when everywhere you look in LA, there are so many places for lease, like commercial spaces. And it just makes you think that LA is only living a fraction of its potential. And it's always like,
go on.
For if you think about like how difficult and expensive it is to get anything started, even if it's just a temporary pop-up thing, like the thought of like how expensive and impossible it is to get a restaurant off the ground. And if you thought if they weren't that hard or expensive, there's plenty of space for all this stuff. It could, you know.
There's a million spaces and a million people with great ideas, but it's not happening as frequently as it should
be. Yeah, the issue is not finding a location. I mean, a good one is expensive, but
there's tons of them.
They
exist.
I think it's because of LA and California just makes it so difficult to do any of that compared to other places, which we've seen in the entertainment industry where everyone filming in Vancouver or
Louisiana,
you know, every other state where it's like, you want to film here? Yeah.
Just come on
no
in.
No tax. Here, you do have whatever you want. And then in California, it's like, you want to film something here? Bend over and take this check.
And I think that it sort of like limits like the kind of restaurants that we end up with, because there's so many new places that open and you're like, oh, a new place, I'm so excited to try it, and then you end up being like disappointed for whatever reason. And I think it's because like it just beats you down so much, because you might start with such a great idea and the whole process of it, like when you come out the other end, I feel like there's a lot lost. And also with trying to make it profitable, because I'll say like doing the Coconut Club, I approach it foolishly from an art project perspective,
right?
And not from a money making perspective.
Yeah, I was wondering how profitable you are on this pop up, considering all the extra production you put into it.
Yeah, at this point, not at all.
Okay.
But you know, at a certain point, it's like create an idea, create a brand, get people excited about it, and then
it's like Twitter.
Yeah.
You make it, get on board.
I mean, I wish I had, like, you know, that venture funding that a Twitter would have, but, you know.
Right. It's like Twitter without any of the money that they give you.
Yeah, but we're doing something cooler than Twitter.
That is true.
Theoretically. But it was interesting. I was just in Detroit a few weeks ago, and I went to, like, a new restaurant, and it was really good. And I was like, huh, I wonder if it's because, oh, you're in Detroit, it's so much easier to like put together a restaurant. And I mean, like, it's not easy, but you wonder if there's a place where there's like fewer restrictions or like difficulties that suddenly your creativity can blossom more.
Well, it's the story too of Ed Moza, the guy who does I'm forgetting
Mario Batali?
Yeah, no, not Mario Batali, but how they changed all the regulations about making charcuterie in LA. He had to go through that process before he could actually really do the things he wanted to from, you know, permitting standpoint in Los Angeles City.
And you have to be like Moza to like actually have the money to get that
exactly
done.
Right. Nobody else could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think being in a different a place
Spacheca,
like,
right?
Chispaca.
Apparently, I've been corrected by a friend who's actually Italian. He said it's Chispaca.
Chispaca. Not going to do it. I mean, a lot, it's technically Los Feliz, but I'm never going to say that.
No, exactly. This is, that's Chispac is the colloquial pronunciation of Los Angeles.
Indeed.
Yeah. What are you going to do about it?
I feel like the thing, like, it's so much easier to open a restaurant in Detroit than in L.A. or pretty much everywhere else.
Everywhere else. Except for New York.
Except for New York, yeah. But, I mean, are you making as much, like, what other industries do you think? I mean, like there's so many industries where opening in a big city like L.A. or New York will benefit you, but do you think you necessarily need to be in a place like L.A. or New York or another major city to fully thrive as a restaurant? Like, are they doing well for Detroit?
I mean, it had just opened a couple weeks ago, and it was like a Sunday night, and it was definitely not packed.
Right. But I mean, even if they are packed and having good business, like, are they actually making enough money, like making a really good profit? Who knows?
I have no idea. Who knows, is right.
But I'm just curious, like, if your restaurant is successful for those standards compared to other standards.
Other standards, right. But I mean, when you think about it, like, how to be successful on, like, LA standards. And of course, there are places that are just rolling in the money like mm-hmm. crazy because they figured out a business model that works. But then, you know, there's so many places that you think, yeah. like, how do you actually.
I'm wondering, like, how relative it is because, like, in LA, like, you have to make so much money to survive and live here because the cost of living is so high. Mm. Whereas, can you have that same level of happiness and success in a place like Detroit? Because you're making less money, but you need less money to be, quote unquote, happy and successful.
Correct. So I think to a certain extent, yeah, their profit margin could probably be slimmer than mm-hmm. here. Because, I mean, the menu prices were very comparable to what you would pay in LA. Mm. I didn't feel like I got ripped off because the quality was really high. But then you can imagine, like, okay, their food costs are probably a really high percentage. And if you had that percentage food costs at your restaurant in LA, you'd probably go under really right. fast.
But whereas their rent is probably nothing compared to
I mean,
to LA.
Theoretically, but it, even in Detroit, like, as you get into downtown now, like, the rents mm-hmm. are getting a lot higher. And I have a lot of friends who, like, live there, and they have a lot of, like, good things and bad things to say about it. And I think it's a very interesting, you know, look, a very interesting American city to look at for so many reasons.
Yep,
it is.
Absolutely.
I think it's become America's playground right now for the young and mischievous.
America's playground is Detroit now?
For the mischievous people. Like, I know, like, it used to be San Francisco.
People throwing parties there and stuff?
Yeah, it used to be, like, San Francisco in, like, the late 90s was kind of, you can go there and do whatever, and mm-hmm. the cops don't really care. Like,
right.
you can go, you know, drink in the street and paint yep. graffiti and have a big party outdoors and no one's going to give a shit and all that stuff. And then it's changed over, and I feel like Detroit is a new version of it where if you're a 21-year-old hoodlum, and you want to go do whatever you want, you can do that in Detroit.
Detroit, I will see you soon.
Which also means, you know, there's a lot of creative people heading
yeah,
there because
sure.
it's
yeah,
cheap
yeah.
and you, the sky's the limit. There's no restrictions.
It fosters.
But then at the same time, yeah. you do have a lack. You don't have as much creative energy as a city like LA or New York or mm-hmm. whatever would actually give you. And I think it's...
You have
it's,
a smaller audience of people
you have a smaller
who
audience. Like, if
doing,
I tried
right?
to do the Coconut Club in Detroit and tried to charge the same amount of money that we
You've
charge
been
in
robbed.
LA... Well, I mean, like,
You've
yeah.
You've been robbed during dinner. Yeah. You've been held at the gunpoint like it's a fucking poker game.
We have a lot harder time selling tickets, I would imagine. Although, there's another theory to say about Tiki... there used to be this amazing tiki palace in Columbus, Ohio called the Kahiki, and it was I think it was built in 1969.
What is a palace?
It's a ginormous restaurant.
Like two-story probably.
No, it was a giant A-frame with like actual tropical plants and huge fish tanks and live tropical birds flying around and multiple bars and a giant fountain and like...
So I would ask the difference between a restaurant... Tiki restaurant and Tiki Palace, but I think you just answered
yeah, we it. Just answered it. And I just read this whole book about it because it's in 2000 was torn down and Walgreens built a store there instead. But it's and one of our recent
Thanks,
patrons
Obama.
At the Coconut Club grew up in Columbus and said that he would used to go there all the time
right.
as a kid. But there was this whole argument about in the Midwest. that tiki bars are such a huge escapist thing, especially in the winter. And when you have a cold, freezing-ass, depressing winter, and you can go somewhere where you walk in and it's like tropical paradise, and they give you all these rum drinks.
Sure.
Like, it's very appealing. So it makes you wonder, like, if we were to do Coconut Club in New York, would February be the right time to do it? Because people would probably be like, oh, hell yeah, I'm on board with that. Like,
well, that makes me ask, looking back at last year's sales reports, for lack of a better word, do you do better in the winter month? I guess it's different for you guys, since you guys sell out every single time.
Yeah,
but, like, do you find that, like, the... you do better, or people enjoy it more, maybe, during the winter months of L.A.?
Maybe. I mean, we were doing it...
down to 62.
When we were doing it at Sunny's Hideaway in Highland Park, because we used to do it there when they're closed on Mondays, we were doing it outside on the back patio for the first few times we did it there, and then it started getting cold, and we made the mistake of continuing to do it outside, even though it was cold. And that pissed off a lot of people. Lesson well learned.
Yeah.
Don't go outside when it's cold.
Pro tip for all of our listeners out there. Well, one thing that I wanted to ask about that, the whole process of doing a pop-up shop versus a restaurant that's open 7 days a week or whatever, 6 days a week, is what you every time you do a full service one day, you learn a zillion things.
Of course.
But when with an actual restaurant, you get to take everything you learned and implement it
the next day. Yeah.
And then for if you're doing it monthly, every time you must be so frustrated, like, oh my God, I've just screwed up these 10 different things I would have totally done differently. And if you had a restaurant, you would just change everything, and then tomorrow everything will be all better. But then you have to wait a full 30 months, and then you get the comments coming back, and everyone, you know, everyone is telling you how you screwed up, and you know it, and, is that frustrating to not be able to do anything about it next time?
It definitely is frustrating, because it feels like, I mean, we had some repeat customers, but for the most part, it's like, here's your one shot to impress people, and you have to make that first impression, and like, you know, there are certainly things that people don't notice that go wrong, and then there are things that people obviously notice, because, you know, everyone's a critic. When I go out to eat, I think about, you know, like, oh, this could be better, this could
100%.
Be better. 100%. Like, all the time. It's what you do. And it's not anything, like, negative or to throw hate towards anyone, because you realize that when you do it, that it's so much harder to do than it looks.
Yeah. Like, it's like making a movie or something. Everyone's a critic. Yeah. Nobody can make them.
It's like, exactly. And theoretically, like, it should be easy to do this. But when you have 500 other things going on, like, it's not. And that's just how it is. So it definitely is frustrating to, like, have to think, like, okay, we had to wait a month to, like, actually implement these changes. But in a lot of ways, it's good because it gives us time to reformulate what we're doing. And particularly in, like, menu and how things flow and whatnot is, like, how can we change things up? How can we make it smoother? Because timing is always the biggest challenge. Is, like, at a restaurant, you know, you're putting out maybe 6 plates at most at a time. In a pop-up, you have to put out, you know, over 30 of the same thing at the same time. Like, all, you know, like, playing is a whole different game. It's like doing, like, a wedding or something.
Yeah. And how many employees do you guys have working under you during a full service?
We have about, like, 7 or 8 people working with us during the service, I think. And that's the other tricky thing, too, is, like, with a restaurant, you hire a staff, and you have that staff. Yeah. With a pop-up, you have to, like, go to your friends who work in restaurants and be like, hey, are you off on Saturday night? Because I want you to come work at my pop-up.
And then they say, no, of course not. It's Saturday night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's always the tricky thing is, like, we have some staff that are consistent, but, like, it's oftentimes, like, changing. And then there's no time for a training period. So it's basically just, like, 5 minutes before service being like, okay, this and this is going to happen, so be ready for it. And then, like, kind of, like, having to, like, wrangle all the servers up every time we're ready to send out a new course. And, like,
right.
It's, like, a lot of things to, like, coordinate that you just don't have time to do because you're not a permanent restaurant. And then the same thing with the kitchen staff, too. It's, like, you know, we're presenting, like, a new dish. It's not, like, something that we've, like, practiced every day and every day. It's, like, kind of on the fly. Like, this is what we're doing. Go.
Do you have, like, a top 5, top 10 of lessons learned over... You're getting now near on a dozen, I think, services, right?
I mean, lessons learned. Well, one of the big lessons learned is... as much as I
don't let Rockabilly people bring their stand-up basses.
Yeah. is the poop personal poo-poo platter, which was a thing that I loved to death. It was this course we used to have in the middle where you get this board covered with a banana leaf, and each board has a tiny tiki torch that burns in the corner, and there's three different items on it. But that's the problem with plating three different dishes at once for that many people, is it takes forever, and no matter how many times I said, next time I'm going to do it better, next time I'm going to do it better, it would always take forever. So I'm finally letting go. Gotta let it go. It was a good idea. It was a good concept in theory, but when you actually have to execute it for, you know, 25 to 40 people at once, it's like...
So 40 people are each getting their own PPPP.
Yeah, that's what happened at the last event. We tried to do it for 40 people, and I was like, I'm going to die.
And that's right in the middle of service.
What was on that platter?
The most recent one we did... the first,
tell me about that poo-poo, though.
The most recent one we did, because it's changed from time to time that I've done it, the first item is the rumaki toast, and rumaki is this weird tiki food that I don't actually even like, where you marinate a chicken liver, you pair it with a water chestnut from a can, and you wrap it in bacon, and you bake it.
Wow. That is the most 1959 sounds very 50s
Chinese restaurant.
Exactly. Sure. So I thought, like, okay.
Water chestnut. What is this exotic ingredient from a
so
can?
So exotic. Oh. So I'm doing, like, a rumaki toast, which is, like, a little brioche toast that has a chicken liver pate that has, like, those rumaki flavors of soy sauce and ginger and coconut sugar and shallots in there. And then, so we have the pate, crispy bacon, and then instead of water chestnut, I do fresh jicama because it's very similar.
Sure.
But it's not from a
can. Not a canned water chestnut being
elevating.
And then in the middle, we have the coconut chicken wing, which is, I make this like Indonesian style curry paste. And then mix it with coconut milk and braise these chicken wings and then batter them in rice flour and deep fry them. So there's that. And then we had a duck confit egg roll that was deep fried in duck fat with a tamarind sauce.
Woo! Gotta step away from the mic. Woo!
So that was the most recent.
So that's one
platter.
Course out of many.
Yeah.
I mean, if people listening can even imagine.
But I mean, the tiny
work.
Tiki torch is really the center of that, because if you imagine and it's a dangerously modified birthday candle, so it burns like for serious. but if you
super
can imagine,
cereal burns, guys.
You can imagine an entire, like, all these, like, we have like three big tables full of all these flickering tiki torches at once. It's like the most exciting happy birthday candle you'll ever see.
So no wonder why you keep trying to make it work.
I know. Well, my thing this time is I'm going to use the platter and the torch for just the plating for dessert, because it's a birthday candle. It should go with dessert.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to waste that, even though I have to, like, hand make all these tiki torches and, like... But I just do it while, you know, watching trash TV or something. Like
some Discovery ID.
That's the beauty of working freelance, is you can do all of this stuff and you don't have to sit in a boring kitchen.
I mean, my favorite trash TV right now is Bar Rescue. That's
I was just watching, or I read something about the Bar Rescue guy went to, he redid a place downtown LA, and then it was their biggest renovation, and they just closed down recently, like it was his biggest flop.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes the show so good. It's like Restaurant Impossible or Kitchen Nightmares, except it involves alcoholics because they're owners of bars. So it just makes the equation so much more...
And the guy from Bar Rescue is so weird looking to me.
Oh, yeah. And he loves like to yell.
Yeah, he's a yeller, but he looks like the guy on Ninja Turtles, like the Koopa Troopa kind of guys. Like the guys with the huge broad shoulders and the small, like, turtle head thing. He has that feel.
Talking about the live action.
The live
the
action
live,
movie.
The live
one.
Action
not
Super Mario Brother movie.
I think.
But yeah, that's a very good description.
Yeah, I think I am thinking of the live action Mario movie. Oh, fuck. Speaking of Food Network and all that stuff, do you have any aspirations for doing some television food hosting of any type?
Yeah. I was...
yes, right, great answer. Yes.
I actually did audition for a show that's still in limbo.
Okay.
But not a competition show, just like a hosting thing. They came to me. It was the weirdest thing.
Fingers crossed. Well, that's not weird.
Yeah, fingers crossed and not weird at all.
Why is that weird?
Eat a Coconut Club.
We've
like,
seen you on Vice Munchies hosting and and slaying.
I mean, that was interesting, especially to read, like, you know, the YouTube comments.
Don't do that.
Never read the comments.
Don't do that.
No, I know, but they're entertaining because they're from like crazy 14-year-olds.
Whew. So your feelings were not hurt at all?
The what?
Your feelings didn't get hurt at all?
No, they did. They totally did.
Come on. Never read the YouTube comments.
Never read the YouTube comments.
Just never. Just straight up never do it. It's never going to be a good thing.
I know. I just can't resist.
It's true. It's sitting there.
Glutton for pun. Well,
you're checking those how many hits it's happening. You see that first line of right below.
Yeah, never do a scroll down. You can look.
Yeah.
See how many hits
look
you got.
Hits. You look at the hits.
Once you click to say show more, you're in trouble.
So it might be like a Food Network show hosting something. That's all we can say. We have an NDA.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like, I haven't heard from them in a couple months, so it's probably still stuff. It's one of those things where, like, oh, we're talking with the network. The network still likes it. Oh, the network loves you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just you know, we're waiting to hear back from the network.
Well, I think you would be a great food television host.
I second that.
You've got it all.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Great job. Well, we're going to wrap things up. Thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So the Coconut Club this month is...
Sold out. But it will be back...
Saturday and Sunday, both sold out?
Both sold out. But...
I was hoping Sunday tickets were still on sale. I saw that there might be a few floating around.
Yeah, sadly.
Filled up. All right, people.
Sunday filled up after Saturday. No surprise.
Right,
but,
of course.
But we'll hopefully be doing it again very soon. So if you get on our mailing list at thecoconutclubla.com... that is how you find out.
Great.
And don't delay when they go on sale.
Don't delay.
They just go away quickly.
They really do, and for good reason. Where can people find you online if they want to?
I am at Wind Attack on Twitter and Instagram.
One of my favorite Pokemon moves.
Exactly.
At Wind Attack on social media.
Yes.
And your website's just Andy. Windack.com?
But
no reason to go there.
No reason to go there.
Don't go there.
It's sort of like my defunct food blog, windattack.com, which still exists, but not like I touched it in...
We all have a defunct blog somewhere.
Yeah.
Fine.
The age of blogging is over.
You heard it here first.
That's what Instagram food pics are for.
Exactly.
Great. Well, thank you so much for doing this. Andre Conaparo has no social media.
I have none.
You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff, at themjeans. And if you like this show, please be a friend and tell a friend, a different friend. Subscribe on iTunes. Nice rating and review is all we ask. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.